Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, a podcast where authors and friends share all aspects of the Catholic faith. Learn more on reconciledtoyou.com.
Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, a podcast about faith in the everyday ordinary, specifically as we journey through books. I love Catholic books. I came back to my faith through spiritual reading and 7 years ago decided this is what I would talk about. And I'm so excited to continue to find amazing, great books for adults and for children. And today we're going to talk a little bit about a children's book with my good friend, Colleen Presbich. Colleen, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm so glad to be here. It's such a gift.
Well, I have to make a true confession to you and to those joining us that I do have this kind of hard, fast rule to make sure I read every book before I speak to the author, but it's Advent, which is kind of like, well, so Lent is the Super Bowl for people who work in Catholic social media marketing, and Advent is kind of like our playoffs. And so I am mid playoff here in Advent, and I thought I had the book. And when I went to find it to read it, because I figured children's book, right? I could read that before we met today. It's missing. So my confession is I am going to, right along with everybody listening, learn all about your awesome book. And I've read your earlier book, The Marian Consecration. That's from our Sunday visitor as well. So I know that you have so many wonderful things to offer. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about your new book. It's called The Woman Doctors of the Church. And again, this is from our Sunday visitor.
Yeah. So my name is Colleen Presbich. I am a mom of five now. We have a brand new two-month-old in the house, which is kind of chaotic.
Yeah, because launching a book isn't hard enough. You might as well throw in birthing a little baby in the middle of it.
Do it with a newborn. Why not? So most of my days are spent here at home, homeschooling. I homeschool my kids and my nephews and niece alongside them. And then I sneak in as much writing time as I can. This most recent book is called The Women Doctors of the Church, and it is about Saints Hildegard of Bingen, St. Catherine of Siena, St. Teresa of Avila, and St. Therese of Lisieux. And they are the only four women on the list of doctors of the church.
Oh my goodness, some of my favorite women. As we were, before we started, I always like to start with a prayer, though I got distracted halfway through the prayer because I remembered I didn't ask how to pronounce your last name. It's one of those things that you see it all the time, but you don't actually hear it. Yep. And it's crazy. And I just completely forgot where I was going with that. This has been, I think I need more sleep, Colleen. I was just telling you.
I can empathize.
I was just telling Colleen before we started that I was doing this interview with a priest for my book, Encountering Signs of Faith, and I was so grateful it wasn't live because halfway through a sentence, just like I just did now, completely forgot what I was talking about. And I know what I was going to say. See, if I just talk long enough, it comes back. It didn't come back with Father Carr, but thankfully it did this time. I was saying in our prayer that I love that there are doctors of the church that are women. It is evidence that Jesus loves women. And I think some people have this misconception about the Catholic faith that it's all about the men and that women don't have a place and that they don't have a voice and that they're second class Catholic citizens. But that is not at all true. Is that what you found in creating this book?
I did. And I love, I mean, now I will admit that I think that there should be more women on this list. Saints Faustina, Saint Margaret Mary should definitely be on the list along with many others. But I will say I love these four women because they challenge so many stereotypes, right? And that's one of the reasons why I wanted my daughters to learn about them is because these are four intelligent, capable, feisty, holy women who followed all of God's plans for their lives, but they just also broke a lot of barriers and also, didn't conform with kind of what like society says a woman should be.
Yes, so I love that.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about each of them, because I think out of the four names, I bet Hildegard is one that people have not really encountered. I love her. Musician, philosopher, incredible writer. She even wrote plays, I believe. She did. Incredible. So tell us about Hildegard.
So Hildegard really was just this Renaissance woman. Like, she could do everything well. Like, just everything. She wrote cookbooks. She wrote one of the very first morality plays. She composed symphonies. She created her own language. She was actually a doctor. And she was one of the only women of her time with permission to preach in public to both genders.
Wow. Like, see, I just learned stuff.
Like,
that's
people
incredible.
And she just, like, she's just incredible. So she started receiving these visions when she was just 3 years old.
Wow.
And for her, she just thought that that's, like, totally normal. Kind of assumed everybody, you know, had that experience. And as she got older, realized that, like, whoa, God, you know, like, God is speaking to me in a very special way. And through her spiritual direction and through the encouragement of some very holy people in her life, she submitted her visions to the church to say, like, this is what I'm getting in prayer. You know, am I on the right track? And the church and the Pope said, oh my goodness, yes, you need to be talking about this more.
Wow.
And sent her out to preach and to talk about God's love. And something so cool with Hildegard, I think, in today's world too, is a lot of her visions were really nature focused. A lot of what she was seeing and a lot of the ways that God spoke to her was through his created world and through nature.
Wow.
And so in today's, you know, when climate change and, you know, how do we care for the earth is such a pressing issue for so many people. I think Hildegard kind of has this new wonderful relevance.
Oh my goodness. I can't now. I knew after I spoke to you, I knew I would be like, all right, I need to get this book. I need to share this with my own daughter and I need to add Hildegard. I'm pretty sure to my Saint posse, because as a woman preacher, I need her in my corner and I'm sure I could learn a lot from her. So let's talk about the other women on the list. Was there any one in particular from, so it's Catherine of Siena, Teresa of Lisieux and Teresa of Avila, right? Is that the other three? Oh,
yep.
Look at me go knowing the doctors of the church. I actually thought Faustina was a doctor.
She should be. She should be. I know that the Marian fathers have petitioned Pope Francis to add her to the list. So I'm really, really hoping that this makes its way through.
I remember signing that petition. I'm in Massachusetts. So the Marian fathers, the Shrine of Divine Mercy is about 2 hours away. I tried to visit at least once a year. It's been a while since. It is gorgeous out there. And it's right down the street from the Norman Rockwell Museum. So you can make like a whole weekend of it. It's just fantastic.
I know. I love that museum too.
It's like, Go ahead.
Tanglewood?
Yes.
The concert. Yeah. So outdoor concerts, books, you know.
It's all the things.
It's
beautiful.
It's all there.
Fun Americana art. Mm-hmm. It's and that the shrine, every time I go, they've added something new to it and it's just gorgeous. But we digress onto Saint Faustina. We'll go back to Catherine, Teresa, and Therese. Was there anything about these three that really shocked you and surprised you as you did your research?
So Teresa and Therese have been in my faith life for my entire adult hood.
Oh, wow.
And they are my extra special patrons. Teresa, because I'm a little bit spicier, just personality wise, she resonates with me. But Catherine was newer for me, and reading her works and reading about her, I loved how honest she was about the state of the church during her lifetime. So Catherine lived during the Avignon Papacy, where the Pope is not in Rome. She lived during a time of corruption. She lived during a time of war between city-states. And she was just, like, honest. Honest about, like, yeah, there are not so good parts about the Catholic Church. But she also always, always, always called people to the church. Like, so she was so clear-eyed about the reality, but she still understood that the reason that you come into the Catholic Church is Christ in the Eucharist, you know? And so she still called people to conversion. She still held people accountable, but she, you know, she kind of was able to hold both truths. And I really admire that about her. And I really want that to be something that my daughters gain from her, is that you can, we don't have to have rose-colored glasses. We don't have to pretend like everything is perfect, but we can still love the church. We can still be proud of the good. We can still hold true to the dogma and the doctrine and the theology, and that there is a way to kind of call others higher in love.
I wonder how many people that I know personally would have stayed in the Catholic Church had they known Catherine of Siena's work, known her teaching, known her philosophy. That I love how you're saying, like, she called out what needed to be changed and what was less than perfect, but focused always on the Eucharist. My own story is one of almost leaving the Catholic Church behind and going with friends to an evangelical service. And it was incredible. The music was amazing. The preaching was incredible. The people were so friendly. Like, they instantly recognized a new face, and I was greeted by so many people. I loved every moment of being there, but I left, and I literally left and went to church, to a mass. And my friends, like, we went to breakfast, and like, why aren't you eating? And I said, well, new diet. No, just kidding. I said, I'm going to mass and I'm fasting because I want to receive the Eucharist. While I loved so much about this, well, they all ended up leaving the church. They didn't find that hole in their heart for the Eucharist. And they just saw the trouble in the church. They just saw the hypocrisy, the clericalism. They just saw the problems. And they never focused their eyes. That's why I'm so thrilled that we're doing a national Eucharistic revival and that the bishops have called for this, because this is the source and summit of our faith and of everything we do. Somebody asked me not too long ago, what was the Eucharist? And my response was, it's not a what, it's a who. And I think more people need to have that on their lips. Like, we speak of the Eucharist as a who. It is Jesus. It is truly him present. And I know all four of these women, these amazing doctors of the church, they had strong Eucharistic lives. And this is how they could do the things that they did. Like, wasn't Catherine the one who called the Pope back from France?
She was. When everybody else had failed, it was Catherine who said, like, essentially, get your butt back here. And, like, kind of, like, did the, like, mama ear tug, like, tug you by the ear and I'm going to drag you back to where you belong.
I love that.
And she's, yeah, but I think the only reason that she was able to do that too is her entire life is centered around the Eucharist. It is centered around Christ. And it was speaking from that place that she was able to be so honest, and people respond to that, right?
They do.
So, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about spicy St. Teresa of Avila. I know that this is considered kind of folklore, but I absolutely love the story. And I included it actually in my own book, Encountering Signs of Faith. I included the story of how she was riding a donkey and kicked into the mud, and then she struck her fist at the sky and said, God, if this is how you treat your friends, no wonder you have so few of them.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that story.
Well, and it's her. Like, if you read Teresa's writing, like, it comes through. Like, she's so blunt and she's kind of sarcastic and she's just very real. Like, so she was working to reform the Carmelite order because she recognized actually within herself that, like, even though she was cloistered, even though she was, you know, in religious life, that she still wasn't living the life God called her to, that things, like, she still wasn't all the way focused. And so she wanted to help the rest of the sisters kind of find that too. But of course, a woman on her own, like, she's having all of these struggles, right? Doing all of this reforming because she needs priests. She needs the backing of the church. And so, you know, she prayed for a long time and she had these two friars come to her and they said, like, well, you know, essentially, we'll help you. We're on board with this reformation. And one of them was St. John of the Cross. And he was very, very short, even for his time period. And so she actually remarked, like, out loud in front of him, like, thank you, Jesus, because now I have a priest and a half. Like, she's just like, she's feisty. And I love it. But I loved, I first found her in college, you know, as an 18-year-old. And I loved, it was the first time I read a book about prayer where all of, like, that was written for a woman. So if you read The Interior Castle, which is Teresa instructing her, the sisters on, like, prayer life, and, like, this is how you find the Lord within your own self, all the pronouns are she. When she talks about the soul, it's her soul. I've never noticed that.
Oh, wow.
And it was the first time that I was like you said earlier, that, you know, like, God loves women and women have a place.
Yeah.
And this was the first time where I was like, whoa, like, this book is written for a woman's heart.
Wow.
And men can read it too. And it's really, really amazing and wonderful. And men have read it, you know, for centuries, but it's written from that feminine perspective, from the way that, you know, a woman responds to God. And I love that.
I love
just, like, what she was capable of. And I love that she's very honest about her faults and about her struggles. You know, she's not a saint that, like, did everything perfect straight through, you know, like, her big, you know, she was middle-aged before her prayer life really took off. And, you know, like, that she, like, had these ups and downs and these peaks and these valleys. And I love that about her.
I didn't know most of this, and I think I have been remiss again. And this is why we read books. This is why we talk to people who write books, because we discover so many things. My prayer life did not blossom until I was late 30s, and I'm still working on it, and I'm heading into mid 50s. And I love that she wasn't perfect. Like, one of the things that I remember coming back to the faith, I'm a revert, was this fear of, like, I can't be a saint because I'm not perfect. And this fear that I was just going to fail at being Catholic again, and discovering that I didn't need to be perfect. And I'm definitely going to pull out my interior castle, because I know I've read pieces of it, but realizing that the she pronouns in there, I obviously haven't read it closely.
I love that about her. And so it's funny because, like, Therese, who takes her name from, you know, Teresa of Avila, always I had in my head, before I really actually read her writing, I had in my head this image of her as this very, like, kind of pastel-y pink saint, you know, like, just sort of sweet and innocent and lovely, and always kind of, like, held her off, like, that's not me, I don't love that. And actually, it was during my mission year, we had to read her Story of a Soul, and we prayed with it, because she is one of the patron saints of missions.
Yeah.
Which I love too, because she never actually left her convent. But as I'm reading her writing, like, Therese challenges me constantly. Because, so her whole thing is this little way, this idea of, Lord, like, I'm in a convent, and I'm not, she had tuberculosis, she wasn't particularly strong, she died very young, and she's like, I'm not able to do these huge things for God. I want to do these huge things for God, but she realized that what he was calling her to were the little things. And so she would purposefully and like very intentionally make sacrifices for the people that she loved. She would very purposefully try to love the people in her convent who maybe were a little difficult and their personalities chafed against each other. And, you know, like she just like leaned into those relationships that were hard. Yeah. Which is way more difficult for me than like the idea of like, let's pack a bag and head to a third world country and go be on mission, right? Okay. Like, and then the other thing that I love so much about her and that constantly calls me deeper is that she sent, and one of the illustrations in the book actually is this image. I'm gonna find it because it's so gorgeous. Is her sitting on God the Father's lap. Because she said that that's like whenever she made a mistake, whenever she sinned, whenever she, you know, struggled, that's what she would do. She would picture herself running to God and climbing into his lap and telling him all about it. And I know for me, like, that's really hard. That's really hard to do because I want to like clean myself up. I want to like get myself put back together. I want to start to make amends before I go to God. I want to make sure I've said all of my I'm sorries. I want to have a plan in place. And then I'll go to him and go, okay, I screwed up, but I also did all these other things, And she was like, no, you go to God first. You go to God as soon as you made a mistake. And that is such a challenge.
It is.
And it's such a challenge for me to model to my kids because I want them to do that, right? Like my kids definitely have that like, you know, tendency to like make a mistake and, you know, be ashamed and run and hide. And like, I want them to follow Therese, but if I want them to do that, I have to do that.
So that's a powerful lesson.
Yeah, it's tough.
She's a challenge. She is. I had I didn't want her in my Saint posse because I felt like she was super busy. And I was actually introduced to her when I was about 15 years old. And I'm showing, if you're listening on the podcast, I'm showing a prayer card of Saint Therese of Lisieux. It's the 5-day prayer, which I love because I have ADHD. I can't always make 9 days of a novena, but this is a 5-day one. And it was given to me by my seed planter, Mrs. Perfetti, Andrea Perfetti, back when I was in high school. I used to visit her home. I didn't really have a faith life, but I was so drawn to this woman's peace and joy. I really wanted to know what she had. And she had a very devout prayer life. And St. Therese was part of her posse. So over almost 40 years ago, she gave me this card, which still sits and stares at me every day. And I pray that prayer whenever I'm traveling. Or I'm going to do a talk because that's kind of my mission work. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want her part of my posse, but I felt like she stalked me. Like, I feel like sometimes saints are like, no, you need me in your life, and I am going to just stalk you. And she was one of them. And I'm so glad that she did, because, and I'm kind of a brat too, because like, she is called the little flower, and she said, I'm going to shower the world in roses. And so the if you haven't heard of Saint Therese yet, when you pray to her as a, not as an answer to your prayer, if you're going to get what you want, but just this kind of letting you know that she heard your prayer, you will receive a rose. And for me, it's been the word rose. I ask for purple roses and I get them. It's crazy. It's a picture of a rose.
Yep.
It's just incredible. It never fails. Ever, ever have I failed to get a rose.
No, me either.
It's
in so many years. Yeah, she comes through. She comes she through. Does. And she is, yeah, that was, her goal was to get to heaven so that she could do more good. And I actually recently, just a couple years ago, found a book of letters. So she, there was a young man studying for the priesthood who wrote to her order and said, I'm struggling. I need somebody to pray for me. Sisters, can you pray for me? And her mother superior was like, well, I'll do you one better, and gave him a pen pal and had Saint Therese write to him. And they've, all of these letters have recently been collected and published, and it's her like counseling this young priest.
One of my favorite books. And you know, the really the godsidence moment, as I discovered it as I was doing that same thing for a seminarian. I was introduced from a friend in the seminary. He's like, he really needs a spiritual mama. He's like, do you mind speaking with him? And so we would text and write emails back and forth, like the modern day pen pal, right?
Yep.
And we did this for years and years. And for a ordination gift, I was looking for some special book and I found that. And it was like, wow, like I'm nowhere near giving the spiritual counsel of Saint Therese, but I was doing God's work and will, and what he needed to hear was kind of equal. Like, I'm not going to downplay the Lord's work in my life, but that is one of, and I will put the link to that in the show notes. Can you remember the name of it?
No, I'm never going to remember the name
of it. No, me neither. And it's, his name starts with an M, and I want to say Maurice, but that doesn't sound right.
No, I think you're right. Oh, I think it is.
There you go.
That it's her, like, even, you know, in life and in death, like her whole focus is helping souls know how loved they are.
That kept me Catholic and brought me back to the faith is that I noticed that my Protestant friends, when they have a problem, ask people to pray. Like, that's the first thing that happens. Prayer chain, let's get on it. And one day I just kind of had this aha moment of, why aren't we including those who are sitting right in his presence? Like, this is prayer chain, inward and outward and upward. I don't mean outward and upward. I can't see a better way. Like, I ask my friends here, you know, the church militant, but of course I'm going to ask the church triumphant, the saints, to pray for me as well as the church suffering. Like, I put them all to work. Like, we are a body of Christ, and I put them to work. Before we end though, Colleen, is Adelaide Hude your illustrator?
Yes.
I recognize her work.
Amazing.
She is incredible. I worked for Wine Women in the New Evangelization, she did a lot of our journals, our coloring book journals, and a lot of work for us. She's probably one of the most talented illustrators ever.
She is. I am beyond like ecstatic to have had her on this project. This is our second collaboration because I did a Stations of the Cross for OSV, which is like booklet, not book, but she illustrated that one as well. And then this one is this gorgeous like Art Deco kind of style art. And she really captured the personalities of these women. They're stunning. That is amazing.
One of her strengths, I've always told her, is the facial expressions.
Yep.
The life that she gives to this two-dimensional object. And she was telling me, just a little side note here before we end, is that she looks at her own face in a mirror. Like, she makes the expression that she wants to convey, and then she transferred it. And I started to laugh because she's got one of my favorite images of Our Lady of Guadalupe ever, and it looks just like her. Like,
yeah.
I knew your tactic of your strategy, whatever you want to call it, technique. That's where I knew your technique, Adelaide, when I saw the picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Well, you'll see there's definitely a little bit of her in Hildegard, and I love that too.
That makes sense.
Aha. But yeah, she did an amazingly beautiful job. The illustrations are just They're bright, they're colorful, they're beautiful.
Gorgeous.
And they just, they really do pull out the personalities of these women. Like there, so there's two full page illustrations for each woman. And one of like Catherine of Siena's is her cutting off her hair, which my like 4-year old daughter loves, especially, you know, when we discuss how you're not allowed to cut your own hair. But like, cause that's St. Catherine didn't want to get married. And she had these, she, you know, she was gorgeous, this beauty, long hair. And she said, no, like, I'm really serious. I'm not getting married. And she chopped off her hair. And so that's one of the illustrations. And she just, yeah, they really, they shine through. So.
It is such a special book. We're talking today with Colleen Presbich, her new book, The Women Doctors of the Church, Our Sunday Visitor. I always tell people, first and foremost, please go to your local Catholic bookstore, yes, your shrines, anywhere where Catholic books are sold, and mm-hmm. ask for them. Ask for it. If they don't have it, they can get it for you. And you're helping evangelize. You're helping them discover what is out there and what people might be looking for. How can they keep up with you, Colleen? How can they learn more? And is there anything special about the book that perhaps they'll find if they come?
So you can find me on my website, which is elevatortoheaven.com, which is a nod to St. Therese. And you can find me on Instagram at Colleen Presbich. I do have some fun extras for the book. I've got a Women Doctors of the Church party pack.
Love that
is really fun. I have a free course that is how to share a faith story with your kids, because I know that that's something that a lot of us parents want to do, but maybe don't know how to bring our own faith down to their level. So that's a free course on my site too. Nice. And yeah, you can follow along with me, and I'll have some more books coming out next year. So,
oh my goodness. Well, we will have you back for another visit. So enjoy and next time I promise I'll make sure the book arrives and I read it you get here.
That's okay.
It was, you know, this was exciting and I knew that we could handle it without reading it. And I learned so much and now I can't wait to share it with my daughter, Faith. Colleen, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I will have all the links in the show notes. Again, The Women Doctors of the Church, out now from Our Sunday Visitor. You have been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras. God bless.
Thank you for listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras. Your reviews at your favorite podcast service help this podcast reach others who may be blessed by the content. Please subscribe and share with others. Come back soon for an all-new episode.